So when the Buddha taught, there were some principles that he really accentuated in his teaching. And I just want to review those right now. So these are called the Four Seals, and there are four teachings that all of the Buddhist traditions share. Because, you know, there's many different varieties of Buddhism, but all of them adhere to these four seals, the four seals that make a teaching Buddhist. So the first one is that all composite phenomena are transient. Okay? What that means is that anything that is made, anything that's composed, is composed or constructed, or arises due to causes and conditions, it's impermanent, it's transient, it doesn't last long. Okay? So you may have heard of the three characteristics. This is one of them. Okay? So all composite phenomena are transient. Now, what does that mean in our life, to say that everything is impermanent? Okay? Well, what it means is that things rise and cease in every moment. Things come into existence and cease. Come into existence and cease. So since everything is changing all the time, then there doesn't make any sense to hold on to anything and cling on to anything as if it were permanent. Yeah. But this is one of the reasons why we have a lot of problems in our life. It's because we don't understand it, or should I say we understand it only in our head, but we don't really live as if things are impermanent. We live as if things are permanent. Okay? We think, for example, our lives are permanent, but in fact our lives aren't. Are they? They're changing. They're transient. We're in the process of aging all the time and going towards death. The things we own are also impermanent. You know, we can cling on to them as mine, but it doesn't make much sense to cling on to them as mine because they're changing all the time. They're decaying. Okay? Any new thing that we get is already in the process of decaying. Yeah? So what this means is that there's no sense attaching to stuff. Okay? When we don't attach to things, then actually we have a lot more happiness in our lives. Okay? Initially, people think that when Buddhism talks about the disadvantages of attachment, that it's so sad. You know, or when Buddhism talks about things being impermanent, then it's so pessimistic. You know, everything's, we're all gonna die. We're all going to separate from what we like. We're all getting old. Buddhism's so pessimistic. You know? People misunderstand. Actually, it's not pessimistic. It's reality. Isn't it? Yeah? I mean, from the time of conception in our mother's womb, we're aging and going towards death. That's not a lie. That's reality. Okay? And it's reality that whatever we have is going to fade away. It's not going to always be ours. But that's not pessimistic, because if we let go of the attachment to all these things, then we can really enjoy things when we have them. But when we're separated from them, we don't feel any kind of loss or pain of separation. Yeah? Wouldn't that be nice? To be able to enjoy things, but then when you separate, not feel sad. Think about it. Yeah? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to love people, but then when they die, you're not completely crazy with grief? Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah? Or wouldn't it be nice when you have something beautiful that you really enjoy it, but then when you separate from it, you don't cry and mourn because it broke, or you don't have it anymore, you just are able to accept the separation? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah? Okay, so the fact that things are impermanent, that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy them. but it actually enables us to enjoy things more because we're free of the mind that clings onto them. Because when we cling, we can't really enjoy. Okay? Let me give you an example. Let's say there's some really good food. Yeah? You want to give me, what's an example of good food? And don't say durian. Okay? Because that's terrible food. Okay, let's say there's some noodle dish, okay? That's really good. These really nice noodle dish. Okay. Now, if you're attached to it, when you're eating it, yeah, the mind is saying, oh, this is so good. So you're trying to eat really fast because you like it. When you eat really fast, are you tasting the food? No. Are you enjoying the food? No. Because you're eating it so fast so you can go get more before somebody else does. Okay? Is there any pleasure in that? No, there's no pleasure. We're not enjoying the food. Okay? So the attachment prevents us from enjoying it because we're just so clinging to it that we're trying to get more, but we're not appreciating what we have. When we don't have attachment to the food, then we can sit there and eat slowly and really enjoy it and really taste it and enjoy it. And when it's finished, we're okay. We don't go, oh, I want more. You know, we just say, oh, that was nice and it's over and fine. We're peaceful. Okay? So you see that actually we enjoy life more when we don't have the attachment. The attachment actually prevents enjoyment. The same thing in a relationship. You know, if you're really attached to somebody, then you think that you're enjoying that person, but actually the attachment creates a lot of problems in your relationship. Okay? So let's say you meet Prince Charming. Okay? You know Prince Charming? Or Princess Charming. Okay? But I'm going to talk about Prince Charming. Okay, so Prince Charming, he finally comes in, you know, his white horse, that whole thing, you know, the guy who is just wonderful, who you're going to marry and live happily ever after. Okay, so when you get attached to him, then what happens? You develop all sorts of unrealistic expectations. Yeah, like, oh, you know how it is when you first fall in love with somebody? They're so wonderful, aren't they? Yeah, don't you think so? When you first fall in love, this person doesn't have one single fault. They're just marvelous. Yeah. And then what happens after a while? Yeah. Are they still as marvelous after 2 years, after 5 years? Well, you begin to notice some things, that Prince Charming sometimes is in a bad mood, you know, and he wakes up and he's grumpy in the morning and he doesn't say thank you when you do things for him. Okay. And all of a sudden, we're noticing that this person that we were so attached to has faults and we're so let down. Yeah. Oh. You know. And so, What creates all this up and down in the relationships? You know, because you know how it is, all the songs in the radio, you know, I love you, I can't live without you. Ah. And then, you know, the next song is, oh, you know, you betrayed my trust and you left me, I'm miserable, you know. So with these extremes, you know, going up and down and up and down, Lama Yeshe used to say that we have yo-yo mind, you know, up and down and up and down and up and down. Okay, so what causes these problems in our relationships? Well, a lot of it is attachment, because when we're very attached to somebody, we expect them to be perfect. We expect them to be everything we've always wanted. You know, we expect them to do everything we want them to do when we want them to do it. Yeah? Is that unrealistic?
Yes.
Okay. If somebody came to you and said, you're the most wonderful thing in the world, and I love you to death, and I expect you to always be what I want you to be, what would you say? Hey, you know, don't project that on me. I'm just a human being. I have faults, you know. Don't expect me to be perfect. We wouldn't want somebody projecting that on us. We want somebody who can really accept us, okay? But when we reverse it, when we project all this wondrous stuff on somebody else, we're setting the stage to have a lot of difficulties in our relationships, okay? So this attachment, you know, really prevents us from having a good relationship with somebody and really appreciating them. Because instead we have all these fanciful ideas of what we want them to be. Okay? Okay? So the fact, let's get back here, to this first of the four seals, that all phenomena are impermanent, all composite phenomena are impermanent. When we realize that, that prevents the attachment. So it makes it much easier for us to really appreciate people and to enjoy things. Okay, so that's the first of the four seals. Second of the four seals is that all contaminated phenomena are unsatisfactory by nature. So this word unsatisfactory is dukkha. Sometimes it's translated as suffering. So some people misunderstand Buddhism and they think that Buddha said everything is suffering. And they say, how can that be? Because I have happiness sometimes. Well, it's true we have happiness sometimes. But the kind of happiness we have now doesn't last forever, so it's unsatisfactory. There's another kind of happiness that comes through internal transformation, okay, that can provide a constant state of mind. But the contaminated happiness that's contaminated by ignorance, anger, and attachment, that is unsatisfactory because it's not going to last, okay? So that's the second of the four seals. That all contaminated phenomena, all phenomena under the influence of ignorance or created by ignorance are unsatisfactory. They're not going to bring us lasting bliss. The third of the four seals is that all phenomena are empty and selfless. Okay, so this means that things do not have an inherent nature, something in them that makes them them. Okay, when we look at the glasses like this, it looks like there's something in here that makes these eyeglasses, or there's something in this that makes it a microphone. But actually, if we take the glasses apart, we find a frame, we find lenses, but we don't find something that is glasses. If we take the microphone apart, you know, we find the stand, we find the little piece in here, we find the battery, but we don't find anything that is a microphone. So that's what's meant by saying that all these phenomena are selfless and empty. Yeah, they don't have an inherent nature. So what this means in terms of our own spiritual practice is because we do not have some kind of inherently existent personality, it means we can change. Okay? We're not inherently evil people, even if we make mistakes. Okay? We make a mistake, but that doesn't mean we're bad people. There's no inherently existent bad person in there. Okay? There's no inherently existent me that I have to worry about and be concerned about all the time. Okay? So that's, you know, in relationship to the self, to the I, when we say that all phenomena are empty or selfless. And it pertains to everything else we see around us, too. It doesn't have its own nature, but instead things arise dependently. They're dependent on other things. They exist in an interrelated fashion, dependent on causes and conditions, dependent on parts, dependent on our mind that conceives and labels them. Okay, So that's the third of the four seals. The fourth of the four seals is that nirvana is true peace. Okay? Now, what do we mean by nirvana? Yeah, there's a lot of confusion about this. Sometimes people think nirvana's a place. You know, just you know, go on MapQuest and look up how to get to nirvana. Actually, somebody did this. They found in the U.S. in Michigan, there's one little town that's called Nirvana. Yeah, so you see, you can get directions on how to drive to nirvana. But that nirvana is not going to really bring you true peace. You know, the kind of nirvana the Buddha's talking about is a state of mind. It's a quality of mind, okay? It's the quality of the mind being freed from ignorance, anger, clinging, attachment, okay? It's that separation from the afflictive emotions. That is nirvana. It's the separation for, or the ceasing, the or the having ceased of the wrong conceptions that is nirvana. Okay, so nirvana is an absence of suffering and its causes. Okay, it's an absence. And that's true freedom. Yeah, we talk so much in the world about freedom. We all want to be free. But what does freedom mean? Okay? Does freedom mean, oh, I'm free to, you know, buy anything I want, or I'm free to do anything I want? Well, sometimes what we buy is not very smart, and sometimes what we do is not very smart. So, you know, just having physical freedom to do things, that's nice, but it's not real freedom, because as long as our minds are under the influence of ignorance, anger, and clinging attachment, we're not free. Yeah? Think about it. Yeah? Have you ever been in a totally beautiful place and been very unhappy? Has that ever happened to you? You go on vacation somewhere, some beautiful place, and you're totally miserable? You know, I think most of us have had that experience. So, you know, what, we're in a beautiful place, but the mind's miserable. Why? Because the mind is not free. Yeah? Ignorance, anger, and attachment make our mind unhappy. They make our mind unfree. Okay? So just external freedom, you know, is nice, but it's not the ultimate freedom that's really going to bring peace in our hearts. The kind of freedom that we want is the freedom from the disturbing attitudes and the afflictive emotions. That's real freedom. Because when we have that freedom, then it doesn't matter where we're at or who we're with, our mind is happy. Okay? Now think about that. If you're really free, and there's no ignorance, anger, and attachment. That means that you can be in an ugly place and your mind is peaceful and content. It means somebody can be talking about you behind your back or criticizing you to your face and you're completely okay. You're not bummed out about it. You're not in a bad mood. Okay? Wouldn't that be nice? Don't you think? Yeah, wouldn't one of the greatest things in your life be to never get angry again, and not because you're stuffing your anger down, but simply because there was nothing in your mind that created any dissatisfaction or hostility. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I mean, think about it. People could say anything in the world to you that they wanted, and you don't get angry. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah? You could have anybody for a boss and you'd be happy. Be so nice. Yeah? Or think about it, if your mind were free of attachment, then instead of always being dissatisfied, I want more, I want better, I want more, I want better, then instead of that, whatever you have, complete satisfaction, total contentment. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, you wouldn't have this compulsion of, I have to go earn more money, I have to go get this, I have to do that to be happy. But instead, whatever your situation was, complete contentment. I think it would be great. Okay? So when we think about nirvana, this is what nirvana's meaning. It's not a place that we go to. It's a state of mind. And it's a state of mind that comes about by having ceased the defilements. So in actuality, how we define nirvana is it's the emptiness of inherent existence of the mind that is free from the afflictions. Yeah? And that's real peace. That emptiness of the mind that is free of afflictions is total peace. And it can never be removed, it can never disappear, because it's an unconditioned phenomena. And when the Buddha talked about the unborn, when he talked about the undying, when he talked about going beyond death, this is what he meant, was the state of mind of nirvana, okay, that isn't a conditioned phenomena, okay? So that's what we're aiming for. And that's what this text is teaching us. Okay? And Shantideva in particular is teaching us not just the cessation of our own misery, our own nirvana, but how to attain the nirvana of a Buddha. Because the nirvana of a Buddha is also attained through the motivation of compassion, through the motivation of bodhicitta, or what we call the, here it's translated as the spirit of awakening. I also translate it as the altruistic intention. Yeah. So that's the kind of nirvana, the Buddhist nirvana that has this love and compassion as well as the cessation of suffering. That's what we're aiming for. And that's what Shantideva is going to teach us in this text.